What's up, Changemakers, and welcome to another, finally, I should say, another new episode of the Unbossers podcast. It's been way too long since my last conversation with Alex Hurst and Lizzie Penny on work style and new ways of working in the 21st century. Absolutely love those guys and love the conversation. If you haven't listened to it yet, definitely check it out. But since then, I wasn't able to publish any new episodes because, I'm working super hard, ladies and gentlemen, on the plans for Unbossers 2024. And we are co-creating these plans together with customers and our partners. And I can't wait for it to be September so that I can share these plans with you because I'm over the moon excited. We are really trying to do something very unique and special, at least in our area of business. So yeah, that's that. But in the meantime, I do have another inspiring and insightful conversation for you about one of the bigger topics in organizations these days, diversity and inclusion. And I'm tackling this topic with an authority. I'm tackling it with Delia Mensitieri. Delia is a clinical psychologist and she's doing a PhD on diversity and inclusion. And we cover a lot of ground in this conversation. First and foremost, we create some clarity, like what is the difference between diversity and inclusion and why is it important for organizations and what can leaders and basically anyone in an organization do to help become the organization more diverse and inclusive? What are the biggest challenges and pitfalls? What are some very cool examples of diversity and inclusion in the world? And also we tackle a topic on which almost everyone has an opinion, and that's the topic of the quotas. Are quotas a powerful tool, or do they make things worse? And then lastly, obviously, I also want Delia to share her dream, like how does her diverse and inclusive dream organization look like? So yeah, we tackled the topic from many different angles, and I found it super, super insightful, and I hope you do too. So without further ado, here is Delia Mensitieri. At last, Delia is on the Unbossers podcast. I'm so happy.
Indeed, finally.
How diverse and inclusive is your summer so far, Delia?
I think it has been quite diverse. I've been to a couple of countries until now. So I went to Italy and then I went to South Africa. And now I'm back in Belgium. And then I'm planning back to go to France. So it's been quite diverse, inclusive. That's a good question.
Maybe that's already a good question to start with, just to create some clarity. What's the difference between diversity on the one hand and inclusion on the other hand?
That's a good question. I think it's important to distinguish the two. So I always like to use a metaphor to explain the difference. So imagine you are listening to this podcast, you are getting hungry, and so you go to the kitchen and you imagine you have a diversity mindset. What will you do? You will open the fridge and you will start randomly picking out some ingredients. You put them all together in the pot. You start cooking and you don't look at cooking times. You don't look if the flavors match. You just put everything together. The chances that you will end up with a nice and tasty dish, it exists, but are rather slow. So you, it's rather low. So the chances that you end up with something tasty, let's be honest, is rather slim. So what do you miss? You miss a recipe, and that's inclusion. So inclusion is really about how can we make that diversity work. It's about having that mindset. It's about having that you know already upfront what you will do.
Okay. And what inspired you to become a doctoral researcher, passionado, expert in this field?
You know, I'm half Italian, half Belgian, And I grew up in Brussels, in the multicultural part of Brussels. So as a kid, I was very used to be to talk different languages at home, to be surrounded with all those different cultures. And the moment I left Brussels and I went to university, it became all white, all the same language, and it all disappeared. And all of a sudden, diversity was becoming an issue, and you were hearing people, we don't find diverse profiles. And it intrigued me, because for me, it was a given. It was something natural, and I could not understand the issue. And I love to read, and I love to think. So after, I really wanted to understand better why all of a given is a problem. So that's why I started researching it.
Okay. And why is it something that not only you should care about, but everyone who's listening, all of us?
Like I said, actually, it's a given. We are surrounded by a lot of different people. And diversity, it's not only about race. It's not only about being a woman or not being a woman. It's about also about different thinking styles. It's about different people, different degrees, different mindset, different views. And I think that's why it's important. In the end, we all need to work and live together. We need to create a society that is different, because we're not going the right direction right now with the climate change and happening and the economy. We're going into overproduction the whole time. So it's very important that we start listening to other views, other opinions, other ways of doing business, other ways of looking at entrepreneurship and leadership. And so that's why it's so important to have that diversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's good that you point this out, that the entire diversity discussion in companies, it's much more than gender or color of skin. You mentioned different views, different opinions, IDs, model, methods to do business. So it goes much broader. Maybe it's just my perception, but sometimes in the media we tend to zoom in on the gender and race. But if I listen to you, it goes much broader than that, right?
Absolutely. Because what's the point, I find, in hiring people that might may look different, but you don't let them be different? You know what I mean? This is something that we ask, for instance, if we hire people, let's say I can just come from Africa, so that's my, maybe, but if we hire people from Africa here in Belgium, and you ask them to conform to our way of thinking, what's the point in that? So you're just ticking the box. You're not inviting people to unlock their full potential, the different ways of thinking. I think in the end, it's that what you want, that people feel I can be 100% myself, and I can bring my different culture, my different ways of clothing myself, instead of conforming again, wearing all the same clothes. No, I can be 100% myself. If I have a lot of tattoos, for instance, I don't need to cover them up. I can show them.
Yeah. Yeah. If I reflect on that from my personal experiences, it's also when you go abroad and you go traveling beginning of the year, I was in India, and they just organize their society completely different than ours. And what's so enriching is that you really see and understand that how we do things here in the West and in Belgium, more specifically, it's a way of doing it, but there are many more other ways of doing it. Some might end up with other results, or probably most of them will end up with other results. But there's just more than one way to look at things. And that's... That's really enriching, and I think that's indeed what diversity and inclusion in organizations does as well. I have a personal, what's the right word? It triggers me often when I listen to debates regarding diversity and inclusion in companies, that it's like it's positioned as a means to get better results, to perform better, to become more successful, to reach quotas. So it's often positioned as something that you have to do in order to get somewhere. And I don't know, it triggers me somehow, some way that it's positioned as such. Can you relate to that?
I can definitely relate to that. You know, I just came from quite a critical conference in South Africa where we discussed this, I can put a term on it, neoliberal way of looking at diversity. It's only interesting if it gains, if it brings up money, mm-hmm. which is a real pity. Should we only include people because it gives us financial gain? Will we deliberately exclude people from contributing to the economy and contributing to society because it will not give us money? I mean, for me, this whole rhetoric on the business case, I don't like it, especially because there is actually no business case. It has shown, and it's also said what I said in the beginning with my recipe, if you bring all those people together with those different mindsets, the chances are that you will clash, you will have conflict, because people will say, we do it this way, you need to adapt. And that person says, well, no, you hired me not to adapt. And you will get huge conflicts. And actually, when you have big diversity, most of the time, you will see a decline in your financial performance. So in all honesty, I'm going to be very honest, it's not easy to listen to different mindsets, different opinions, especially when you like to get things done and all of a sudden you need to discuss. But I think we need to learn how to be more open and sometimes not think only about the short term, but also on the long term, what the value can be.
Mm. Yeah, and I read a study once where they said that to make a diverse team work, there is a high need of psychological safety, hence, I think, inclusion. And so I think that's why in most organizations, from the start, you will not see immediate positive results, because the precondition of psychological safety is not yet in order. And if that condition is not yet in order, it's much easier to get to good results and teamwork with people that already kind of have similar backgrounds and think kind of the same. Still, then I think there are a lot of missed opportunities. But if you then add more diversity to the team, it becomes even more difficult and complex. What is your advice to organizations then? I love it that you are super honest and say, guys, there is no real business case. It's hard work, but still you want to inspire them to change their mindset. How do you do that?
We like to see diversity and inclusion and equity differently. We like to put them on the side, but actually it's the core of your business. Like I said, it goes really deep into how inspired people are to work for your organization, how they can contribute. Actually, diversity, equity, and inclusion is, I like that you use the term psychological safety. A lot of my research goes into organizational silence, how people are scared to speak up, to share an idea that they think, oh, it's an amazing idea, I think we should go there, but they don't do it. Or that when they see, this happened with Boeing a couple of years ago, of we know that airplane has issues, but we don't dare to say it. And so it has major consequences, that culture of I do not dare to speak up. And that involves everything also on more the normal diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation, but it goes way broader. It goes again into, do you really want to create a culture where people just conform where you don't have self-leadership, where people cannot employ their talents, where you can really feel that vibe of innovation and of thinking and of let's go for it. In all honesty, I know where I would prefer to work. It would be in a company that inspires me instead of a company of I know I just do my job 9 to 5 and I just execute.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to segue a little bit to what are you actually researching as a doctoral researcher? What is it that your research is about?
Well, I look at how the organization is structured and how we can restructure it to really let that inclusion of talents can thrive, that people really feel what do they need to speak up, what do they feel that they need to contribute, basically, from their own talents.
Yeah, and what are your first insights, if there are any to share already?
Well, at the moment, there is a lot of focus on the individual level. Let's be honest, on training. We need to train people to become more assertive, or we need to train our leaders to become more inclusive. So there's a lot of focus on training. And while training is very important, you need to go a step further. You need to go a step further first. You need to really dig, okay, how is our system built? How do we listen to people, for instance? How do we catch your feedback? How can we make sure that we know what's happening on the ground? How can we, as high leadership, the board and the executive committee, how do we capture that information? That's one thing that is very, how does it, do you work in silos, or is there really that open information stream? That's one thing. A second thing that is very important is that do not hire immediately diverse talents if you're not ready for that. I mean, what will you do? I see a lot of companies, they put a lot of effort in filling up the quotas, basically. And then you have someone who sits at the table and they cannot say anything, or they're extremely excluded. And what will happen? That person will leave in a couple of years. So you've put so much effort, but the turnover is massive. And that person feels horrible for such a long time. So why would you put someone in that position? So make sure that at least you already put some things in place to embrace that person.
Very, very interesting. And can you share maybe one or two real life examples that you've encountered that you found inspiring in how they've not only trained their people, but really embedded it in their systems?
So I always like to use an example, and it's Marilla. So it's an Italian family owned company in Parma. So it's basically the middle. It's middle of nowhere of Italy, and they had a huge scandal back in the days that the CEO said in front of all the media that they would never use a same-sex couple in their advertisements, and that was a massive. It had a massive backlash from all over the world, so he had to step down. So they got a new CEO, and he said, well, this is key, this is crucial for my business, and it's also crucial for everyone working here, so this is now a business priority. If you do not stand behind, there is the door, you can leave. And what they did, and I really liked it, is that they formed employee resource groups. It's called ERGs. And so it's groups of people who work on specific topics, and they get a seat at the decision table. So when the company is, I don't know, they wanted to change their parental leave, they would ask the different groups to come in and give their input. Do you believe this is a good decision? Do you believe that we should do so? And they gave, so you had groups, for instance, of LGBTQ parents, for instance. You had also groups of grandparents. You also had groups of, just parents. And so they could all give the input on the new systems. And I think that's the way to go, that we as a top do not only believe in we know it all, but no, you really go and ask, okay, this is what we want to do. What do you think? Where are the flaws? Do you see something? Should we improve? Or did we go over the top? Maybe we are creating a problem or solutions for things that are not an issue. And so I really find it a good practice. Just to be clear, Barilla got a new CEO, so we need to see now how things will evolve. It's always when you have a new CEO, things change. But that's important, that you really give a voice to your people and really give them a seat at the decision table.
I'm so sorry to interrupt this insightful conversation, but I just want to do a quick shout out to Unbossers fellow and former CEO of Etex Group Worldwide, Paul van Ooyen, because it's thanks to Paul that this conversation with Delia could take place. So Paul, if you're listening, thank you very much. And also, my dear listeners, have you recently checked out our website, www.unbossers.com? Because it has some incredibly relevant content, both lessons learned from the events that we co-hosted with the super unbossed organizations like Dedicate, Buurtzorg, Teal Partners, Hire, as well as testimonials from our customers that we work with. So if you have time, if you have a split second, definitely check it out. So yeah, there you go. This is me being commercial, and I think we're all happy that we can now go back to the conversation. Bye-bye.
So it also covers a little bit then decentralized decision making, like really delegating real power to the different stakeholders in your organization, which is to me more than just a voice. It's not like there's an online platform where people can share their ideas. No, it's actually embedded in the decision making processes that those voices are heard and embedded in the decision.
Hmm. You give them power. You really invite them to the table and you listen to them. I think that's important. So if you ask people to stick up and then you don't do anything with it, what you will see is immediately people won't bother again. But if you give them that power, that they say, okay, what you will see is that they really go for it and they really want to help the organization to improve.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked or discussed already the fact or the assumption that humans have this, how should I phrase this? We have this natural tendency to be scared of something that's different, you know, a natural tendency to think in terms of us being my group or my tribe versus them, and how to overcome that?
Yeah. That's indeed we have the tendency to trust people who look like us, that we can understand. It's like, oh, I know where you studied, and I know people that also went to that university or did the same study, so I know it has value. I can trust you. And if you see someone, I don't know this university, I don't know what kind of studies this is, I don't have the tendency to trust you that much. What is important is to always, you can overcome it. The us and the them is artificial. These are barriers, because what is similar to you, in the end, you can always find similarities between people. I think that's also what you have research on universal values, and you will see us as human beings, we have a lot of universal things that binds us together. And I like to work on commonalities. For me, in the end, that's important. And you can always find things that bind people. And I think that is key, because then you will change the us and them, but you will create really the we, you know, because we all go for something. And that's so important, I think, especially in an organization. You have it already there. It's way more difficult for in society, but in an organization, you already have a structure. You already have the we. We're all here because we like this industry, because we like to work here, or we like this company. So use that. Use your company values. of this is what binds us. Use your mission and say, okay, we trust you to contribute from your own differences to this commonality. Mm-hmm. And then it's fine, because then you want that difference of people so that they can contribute from their strengths, their talents, but to a commonality, to something that binds people.
Yep, clear. My follow-up question is, well, I've got two follow-up questions. Let me think with which one am I going to start. Yeah, let me start with the word that you dropped a little bit earlier, being the quota. You know, whenever we talk about diversity and inclusion, one of the typical ways to inspire / impose organizations to become more diverse and inclusive is to set quotas. And I noticed that this measure, it really triggers actually the opposite. I mean, it really triggers a lot of discussion. Let me put it that way. So I'm curious in from your research and personal opinion, how do you look at the power and maybe also the curse of this type of measures?
Quota is a very complex thing. And I always get the question, what about quotas? While there are so many other ways to do things, unfortunately, how organizations are now constructed and how we do things is that they need an external push. I have not met a lot of companies that started to work on this topic without an external push. And so quotas are a necessary evil, I would say, to get things done. So that's how I see it. And it's because the research also shown it's a mixed result. It's a mixed result. Because on the one hand, again, you're hiring people into a system that's not ready for them. Mm-hmm. It can also give a signal of that confirms the stereotypes of they can only get here when we push them. Otherwise, they don't have the capabilities to get there. That's the whole meritocracy discussion of, but are we sure that we are not lowering the standards? Are we just hire the best person for that position? Unfortunately, that's also not true. Most of the time, you hire the person who looks like you to get into that position.
Because isn't there even research done that in the first interview, you give each other a handshake? And basically the rest of the interview is you're asking questions to get confirmation on your first feeling, instinct.
Absolutely. So most of the time, and it even goes before, it's already just checking the name. And then you say, okay, oh, I recognize that name. It's something familiar. And then you shake hands, you see the person, and immediately you say, oh, there's someone I can trust, without any conversation happening.
Yeah, and it's probably how we are wired. I mean, that's something, probably some intelligence that we used to need to survive.
Yes. I think when our ancestors, when the Homo sapiens was still roaming and they were encountering another tribe, it was very important for them to know immediately, is this someone that we can trust or not, because they were still fighting a lot between each other. So at the moment, so our brain became wired to see differences and to attach to that difference, trust, yes or no. So it means that we need to actively rewire our brain to make sure that that system is being fed with more trust signals. And it's a difficult thing, because when we read the media, what we see all the time, we get the signals of, I'm going to be very honest, someone with a person of color you can't trust because they do crimes, because that's how they are being portrayed, which is not true. We don't see the positive examples. So it is also a message that we need to work more on positive examples so we can rewire the brain. For instance, also in the movies, the bad guy or the bad woman, most of the time it's a bad guy, so that's already also something, they have scars or they're sitting, they have wounds. And the hero, well, that person has nothing, still very, although they do the same fights, it's a bad guy who has all those scars. And so when you see someone with a scar, you will immediately think, I don't trust that person. So and that's...
Very, very, very clear and interesting that it even goes into, well, what sounds to me like even the details in movies, not just the obvious thing like the hero is always a man or whatever, but even scars on the face. Yeah. I want to drill down to the individual level. So what we already discussed is that, companies and then especially the leadership needs to change the system, make sure that they embed decentralized power to different stakeholders and so on. Often you'll find individuals saying, yeah, I'm pro diversity inclusion, but my CEO is not with me, or but the management team. So I want to drill down to the personal level, employees, laborers, anyone in the organization, how can they contribute in their practical day-to-day workplace to a more diverse and inclusive space?
I think it's quite a difficult question. I think, first of all, is that you need to acknowledge that you are wired this way and it's completely fine. It's something natural, but you need to acknowledge it. And only when you acknowledge it, you can, I mean, I find myself the whole time thinking in certain ways, but I can correct myself. So it's fine to think, but when you act upon it, is that that's where the problem is. It's when you start acting, you say, oh, again, could be, for instance, when I have students that I saw myself that I always asked girls to make the presentation, and I had no clue. And it's only when a girl told me, you also have guys, why don't you ask them to make presentations, that I realized, oh, it was really a bias of myself that I just assumed girls were better in making 3D presentations than boys. But I caught myself upon it, and I'm really looking at things, and I'm also very open again for feedback. So I don't see that as a personal attack. I see this as a learning opportunity. If someone comes and says to me, Delia, what you've just said was not very inclusive, I don't see that as an attack. I would say, oh, my apologies. Could you really help me to understand better so next time I'm aware of it when I'm doing it?
So I think really self-reflecting on your own thoughts and noticing when the wiring, the way you're wired, almost drives you to the opposite of diverse and inclusive behavior, and then being open for feedback from people.
Have the book of Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. Know when your system one is talking, and know when your system two needs to come in.
I get you. Also at the individual level, if we are diverse and inclusive and we strive to be in every interaction, that also means that we are very open and empathic for people who are not there yet with regards to this entire discussion, you know, people who are skeptic about it. How do you yourself go about the resistance that you probably receive when you promote inclusivity and diversion in organizations all over the world?
I think resistance is very normal. It's something, you are bringing something new and people don't like change. And I think what I always like to explore is where the resistance is coming from. Is it because it's unknown and they don't really understand what's happening? Or is it resistance out of fear of losing power? Because those are two different things. if it's resistance because you don't really understand and you're scared of the implications, that's something you can work with. This is normal resistance, and I completely understand. All of a sudden, you get all those terms. You see, you also see the other side of the spectrum. There's children books are being adapted, language is getting out. Yeah, I can really understand that. For some people, it goes too far, and I go with that fear. But the other fear of loss of power, that's another type of resistance. Of I don't want to share my power with someone else. That's another type of resistance that, in all honesty, is more difficult to work with. That is the only way to deal with that one of resistance of power is really a radical change. Unfortunately, that's a very, very difficult one. And I don't spend a lot of energy on convincing that I don't want to share my power. I prefer to spend my energy on, okay, let's meet other people where they are. Let's meet them in the middle. But I will not meet someone in the middle who is just scared of losing their very comfortable and privileged position.
Yeah. So there's a whole realm of interesting discussions with different opinions on how far do you go and where does individual choice start and stop and so on. But it seems like what you're saying is that the root source of your resistance, it feels like you want people to want to work, to come with good intentions. They can have different opinions, but even to go, if you're purely there to keep what's yours, and protect what's yours, then it seems like you have you don't want to spend too much energy on that.
No, if we work on diversity, we should acknowledge different opinions and different views, as long as it goes from the same values, which is respect, and with good intentions, then it's fine. If you have good intentions and you have respect. But if it's really, and sometimes the way to hell is paved with good intentions, so that's also good to know.
Yeah, indeed.
That's why if you can see there is a mindset to learn and to share, that's something I prefer to spend my energy on than to spend energy on resistance that it's coming out of fear of losing power. Mm-hmm. That's a very difficult one.
How does your ideal organization look like, Delia?
That's a very good question, and I don't know because I haven't met it yet.
What's the dream?
I think the dream would be that you have guidance, of course, of how to do things, but that people feel empowered to contribute from their own strengths. I'm not going as far that they can choose their own jobs and craft everything, because it's not there for everyone. Some people really want some clarity. What do I need to do? And that's completely fine. But I still think that there is a certain degree of freedom in how I also would like to have places of work where not everyone looks the same and thinks the same and dresses the same. If you go to a lot of organizations, you can really see how everyone dresses. You can see the blue everywhere, the dark blue and the white skirt and the high heels, which is a pity. Why should we do that? Why can't we be ourselves? For me, the best organization would be that there is no distinction between the person at home and the person at work. That you can be the same person, that you don't need to dress up, that you don't need to feel like step into a role. No, you're just yourself. And I also encourage leaders and managers to do so, to not feel I need to step into a role to manage people. No, just be yourself. That's more than enough.
That's more than enough, indeed. Maybe we can all boil it down to sense of self-value and the lack of self-value that we're trying to compensate with playing all these different types of roles.
Yes. Self-value and trust, I think. You're hiring people because you trust them. not because you need to manage them and that you do not trust them, that they do their work unfairly. Most people do.
And how can we and the listeners help you realize your ideal, your dream?
Well, you can still take part in the research, of course. That's a possibility.
How do they do that?
Well, there is a website I can share where we are really looking at, for on one hand, to listen to stories, what's happening in the workplace, and on the second, really looking, okay, what are the systems, what can be changed? So that's still an opportunity for me to receive more data, because I also would like, otherwise it's only in my head, and I like to have like the same thing. I practice what I preach. I tend to listen to others of what should change in their opinion.
Okay. I noted down a very concrete action. Let's discuss it after the conversation that we can take. I had one final. One final question. If you would have to come up with a title for this conversation, that what would it be?
And that's a final question. That's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm asking you, because I always struggle with finding good titles for the conversations that we have on this podcast.
Yes, me too. How would that maybe go? Because we ended with the self-value, that inclusion starts with I. It starts really with the self.
Like that. Starts with I. So we will share the website. People can find you on LinkedIn as well.
Yes.
You work for the University of...
Well, I don't really work for the University of Ghent. I'm affiliated to the University of Ghent.
Affiliated to the University of Ghent. And if listeners want to know more, they can just check out the website or contact me and I will bring them in contact with you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Delia. This was my first conversation about diversity and inclusion in this podcast series. It's a fascinating topic because it's, again, what I mentioned before, it's often put in this small space of gender discussions and LGBTQ and so on, but actually it's so much more, and it's a lot linked to what I consider unbossed behavior in the workplace, decentralizing power, trying to find systems to be inclusive in IDs, to be very open in your feedback, to create spaces where people can feel themselves. So it almost seems like there are both synonyms of each other. So it was super interesting. Thank you so much. And we wish you everything that you wish for in your job and your life. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. And indeed, sometimes you like to use terms, but in the end, it's all the same.
Okay, so that is a wrap for this episode of our Unbossers podcast. If you liked it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you can stay up to date with all our future content. For the love of people and business, keep unbossing.